Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you, Yola Tango, as always. This is going to be part two of the podcast that we recorded earlier, the first part on Monday. We split it up because we're super busy and we had such a good time talking that you're now going to hear us talk about drafting, sports, analytics, and a lot of quantitative ideas that might happen, probably never, in the kitchen. And we're also going to talk about a little Moif and a little Ask Dave. But yeah, listen to part two. If you haven't listened to part one, go listen to that now. And let's get on to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though, but take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though, but take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. All right, you know what we got? Ask Dave time.
All right, it's time for Ask Dave. We've been getting a lot of mail, a lot of love. Remember, you can always send us your questions to askdave@majordomomedia.com, or our Discord users can just tag @youknow with questions, and I'll be sure to read them for a chance to be featured on the show. All right, our first one comes from Tim K. Hi, Dave. With the election coming up, I reminisce on the good old days when a food-related faux pas could cost a presidential candidate electoral votes in an entire state. As someone who's pretty opinionated about how we should eat, is there a major food faux pas that could swing a vote these days?
Thank you for sending that in. Our good friend John Heilman. We actually didn't get to work on this in the 2016 election.
Must have been.
It was a while ago. No, we were 2018. It was 2018 election. We were going to try to actually do sort of like a dinner time live, but not live with presidential
candidates.
I was saying contestants, candidates. It was hard to schedule, and I didn't know what I would do if I had shitbag in front of me. So, you know, I thought about that. I was like, oh, fuck.
The show, whenever it was made, you'll just have to do that whenever it is, because he's just going to be a candidate forever.
The goal of it was to sort of communicate how important that notion of food is to an audience and how they eat and what they eat. It is as important as a celebrity going to the Oscars on the red carpet. For whatever reason, the photos of political candidates eating is humongously important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's classic. And if you don't think so, you got to, like, every single candidate for any congressional, Senate, presidential election, you will find a photo of them pandering and eating a hot dog, eating a slice of pizza, walking into a taqueria in a full suit, ordering whatever the local specialty is. Like, this is campaign 101. So, like, you were going to sit down with everybody and eat with them.
Cook for them.
And sort of like,
but, and not only cook for them, challenge them. Mm-hmm. I wanted to put them in a situation where someone was like, I don't want to eat that thing. Is it Vietnam pho? No. I wanted that reaction, yeah. You know?
So, it's got a list here, but like throughout history, you've got like a bunch of candidates who you don't know. We don't know if they lost the election because of these things, but you know, like John Kerry ordered a Philly cheesesteak with Swiss cheese.
Dude.
A famous faux pas.
It's been many years, but just thinking about that, like,
what are you doing, man?
Dude, your chief of staff had one job.
One job. Just like your advance man, just like tell him the order.
Wow. I mean, I'm glad he didn't win president, because guess what? You can't have that kind of unstrategic thinking happening.
It just betrays a lack of preparation.
I don't even know if unstrategic is a word.
It's not. I mean, you have
strategery.
What is, I don't think it's on here, but like, do we count George H.W. throwing up in front of the Japanese prime minister? That's a famous faux pas.
That was a famous faux pas. But there's been many a candidate eating pizza with a fork and knife, including shitbag.
And of course, like what that shows is this, like, again, lack of relatability, just lack of touch with humanity. Like, you eat your pizza with a fork and knife. Like, that means like it's like asking a candidate, the old classic question was like, hey, do you know how much a gallon of milk costs? And they would just say, I don't know, $50.
Gerald Ford ate a tamale with the husk still on. Holy fucking shit, man. Like eating the pizza box. That's fucking insane. I mean, this has to be some kind of challenge for our presidents, like a test. You have the health and wellness test. Like, if they cannot figure out how to eat a tamal, the fuck, man?
Like,
it's pretty intuitive.
I actually don't know how that's physically possible. Like, you can't do that. You can't, like, bite the husk. Like, that's an act of an insane person. That's crazy. That's eating it's eating a candy bar with a wrapper still on.
Unless Gerald Ford said, well, the only other tamale I had was in the at Ferran Adrià's LP.
He's like, I just assumed this was like for us.
Yeah. That was it. Gerald Ford in the 70s. If you said that, that was your only out.
Losing the vote of every American except for five. Do you think, so what is the guy's name? Tim K, is that the question asker? Do you think that there is still a faux pas in today's climate that could actually swing something?
No question.
Like, what would Joe Biden have to do in a particular state to lose that state? Today's the Georgia. We're recording this on the Georgia primary day. What could somebody do in Georgia that would lose the state for them?
I don't know enough about Georgia to do that.
I don't either. I don't know why I asked. That's very different.
But I would be like maybe going to Austin, getting barbecue and like putting mustard on it.
Mm. You know? Ketchup.
Ketchup.
Yeah, I would kill it.
I was like, dude, I mean, I'm glad that this happened because you should not be president.
Oh my God. Just squirting some ketchup onto some perfectly cooked brisket. That would lose my vote.
Yeah.
For sure. I guess you could still lose people that way, but like
Swiss cheese on a.
Jeez,
by the way, actually, I don't blame to some degree John Kerry. I blame where did he get the cheese stick?
Got it at Pat's. Why is Pat's offering Swiss?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that like some kind of red herring?
I think he was being set up to fail. That's what was happening. They didn't even have Swiss. They were just like, oh, you know, throw some Swiss on there. See this guy a little bite.
Well, that's insane.
What's our next question, you know?
All right, guys. Dear Dave, the NFL Draft Combine just happened and the NFL Draft is coming up soon. I feel like NFL Combine measurables are oftentimes specious and don't necessarily translate to on-field success. If cooks and chefs had an NFL Draft Combine, what skills would you test for to get a general idea of their cooking ability? But things that don't necessarily make for a great cook or chef. Tyler K.
Well, listen, Tyler, great question. I think about it all the time because I love the combine. I love all that stuff. But I'll say this, first and foremost is this. Do they give a shit? That's it. Do they care? Do they give a shit? Do they care? Do they love it? Right? And loving it doesn't mean waking up every day and being like, I'm going to be the greatest chef of all time. It's like loving it means I'm going to try to do my best in the face of all kinds of obstacles in front of me. And I'm not going to bitch and moan and I'm going to try to do it. And I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. But you know, like that, loving it is a pretty long definition for me. There's a lot that encompasses it. But if there was a combine and there happened to be a theoretical amount of cooks there, I would, to me, first and foremost, I want to build it around culture and team. And having everybody that is like-minded in that degree of like, they want to do good shit, right? And much like the combine in sports, you have people that are extremely talented but don't have the personality to work with other people because it's all about them mm-hmm. and not about anyone else. Not to say that that can't be successful. They can be extremely successful. What I look for is trying to find how does someone give a shit? And a lot of times for me, it was just family meal. Mm. To me, that's always been the test. Family meal. That is the test. It's like literally the only test you need.
Right.
If somebody gives a shit, they show up early because they started a dough 2 days before and they wanted to do a 48-hour hydrate, blah, blah, blah. And they're, you know, they bring in some of, it's almost like a teacher that buys their own supplies. Like they bought their own pan to cook a, you know, Detroit style pizza because they've never had that before. And you can see that they care and they're asking questions about it and they make it. And maybe it's not delicious. Mm-hmm. It's delicious to every single person in that kitchen because they know that that person gave a shit. Mm-hmm. If you see that, you bet the house on that kind of person. You would think that happens on the regular. It doesn't.
But much like the combine, this is like, and I imagine like the challenge of staffing a kitchen is that you only get to see that over a little bit of time. Once they're in the door, once they're in the kitchen.
You can also see a lot just if they're, so when I work for Cafe Bleu, when I try to get a job at Cafe Bleu, Carmelini would make you cook three courses mm-hmm. in a team full of like killers, right? It was like murderer's row in terms of talented cooks. And you have the sick produce and he's like, cook whatever you want. That's really difficult to do.
God, that sounds terrifying.
During service and you got to like cook it for him. And when he's eating it, everybody's watching. It's very stressful. So you can see a lot in that regard. Oftentimes, somebody that's staging or trying to interview for a job, you can just see if they care. I mean, all the little things. Are there the station? Usually they're probably in the back or something. Do they do everything right? Right? Are their knives sharp? Are there C-folds properly lined up? Are there towels that they were given like nice? Do they have a wet towel? Do they have a dry towel? Are they notepad, pen, paper? Are they taking notes? Are they asking questions, knowing when to ask questions, not during the middle of service when you're in the weeds? All of these intuitive things that you can really test a lot about. A lot of times you can, it's like a poker player. You can read the entire room without even seeing a hand. You know, I feel like a lot of chefs feel that way. So yeah, I would say first and foremost, it doesn't have to happen 6 months a year. It can oftentimes happen that first day, right? I'll stand by that forever. You know, Andre Soltner, I've talked about this on this podcast before. The late Andre Soltner of Lutèce, and I know one day we have to talk about the late great David Boulay who passed, and I was just too sad to talk about it, his passing. Because he was just so instrumental. And also Andre Soltner, who, if you're listening, you're like, who the fuck is that? He was like the fucking king of New York City at a restaurant called Lutèce. And in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, he then became one of the heads at the French Culinary Institute. And one of the things he and Jacques Pepin would always do is cook omelets over and over and over and over again. The reason being, you can tell so much about a person that's making an omelet the right way, right?
Yeah, and like it's such an elegant test because omelet just sounds like, to a layperson.
You mean, you want me to make a Denver omelet?
Do you have any Canadian bacon, chef?
No, but going back to the statistics, like I remember reading Bill Belichick's, I can't remember what book, Halberstam wrote a book about the Patriots. And I just really appreciated the Patriot way, even though a lot of people don't, I get it. But how they approach scouting, even though they've scouted terribly the past few years. But we've talked about this on the podcast before as well. There was a couple year period where we were trying to quantify cooks. I believe that if somebody wanted to do this, you could do this. You could get the sabermetrics and the analytics. I think you can do that with everyone, not just sports, right? So this is pretty rudimentary for sure, but we collected the data. We just didn't know how to process it and mm-hmm. store it or even come up with the formulas that you might need or even if we're doing it right. But there were things that you could understand pretty quickly, right? So somebody was, you know, you'll get points for being early, being late, family all good, whatever. It was almost just like a grading a kindergartner. Did they have a good day, right? And then if you see somebody that had great, 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 and then all of a sudden it was a decline, to me, that was like a red flag that something's not right, right? Something's not right here. Because the data suggests like they used to give a shit, now they don't give a shit. So maybe that is because of us, or maybe it's because something's happening in their lives. So it was really useful for that. But, you know, if you grade someone on how the family meal was and, you know, how many return tickets they had, and there was just ways you could analyze it. I believe that you can, that, you know, Second Spectrum does with the NBA. Not that anyone would do it right now, but I believe a huge business could be created by getting the data and analytics in a kitchen to the degree where, unequivocally so, you can find the right balance of cooks in a kitchen with the right balance of front of the house to get the maximum performance in a restaurant. And data would allow you to do that. And a lot of times it's intuitive to the chef and the general manager to just put that together. But I don't see why you wouldn't be able to put that into an algorithm, be like, you know what? Every cook has a win above replacement. It's the fact. Every cook, I don't need anyone to tell me that's not true. Every single, it's not just in baseball, every job, you know, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it's a system for measuring whether or not, you know, you're above 50% or below, right? Are you above the curve or behind it, you know? And that's what you're looking for.
That's what I'm looking for. And how much, you know, is this person responsible for successful service? And I can tell you right now, if you have a really shitty garmanger and you have a big restaurant, let's just say like the new Jean-Georges restaurant that Jonathan Menno is the chef at, 425 Park Ave in New York City. If he has a shit garmanger station, right? That's like having a bad offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You're going down. Yeah. There may be some nights that you're fine, but to find consistency, any kitchen, even if you have a shitty kitchen of talent, can have great nights, but to be consistently good is a whole nother fucking story. And if you have a bad garmanger station, I think that it exposes a lot of things, but you know, you got to work your way around that. But the reality is, it's like, I can compare that to the previous generation. And so the reason why you might have a bad garmanger station is there's always fluidity in a kitchen. In the good kitchens, it always happens because you want people to leave. Sometimes they come back, but you're leaving to go abroad or whatever. So let's just say the meat roast person and the poissonier, they've become a sous chef and one's going to another restaurant, right? They leave. So now you have to bump up two people. So everyone gets elevated for the most part. And if you don't get elevated, it's a sign to a more difficult job. And difficulty is relative because sometimes your new station isn't difficult. It's just more prestigious.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden, you had a super strong garmanger station. You had like two killers and they're now working the hotline. So it's like losing them in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got some, you know, fifth string offense alignment and you're like, well, we gotta fucking do it. You know, and it's clear to anybody in that kitchen and be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
These three people are amazing. Mm-hmm. There's so much, they add so much value to a successful service than these two greenhorns.
Right.
Right. So that's a simple win above replacement that happens in every kitchen. And it's important, I think, to know like how much better, right? Now, if you think about this restaurant, let's say Gramercy Tavern, that's been around almost 30 years. There's probably been, think about it, 900 to 1,000 different iterations of garmanger station at Gramercy Tavern, which has two garmanger. There's the back dining room and you have the tavern room. Well, let's just say the back dining room at Gramercy Tavern. I would say, just off the top of my head, 900 to 1,000 iterations of garmanger there. It's a lot. It's a lot of fucking data. Now, let's just say you start taking all the data out and you're able to spread it all out because it's been organized so you know, the combination of different cooks and different menu items and seasonality that can all play a role in a good service or not. You sort of take out the bottom third, you take out the top third, and now you're here in the middle. And that's sort of important to know. It's like, okay, now I want to identify why this bottom third was so bad. Was it because they're bad? Was it because we changed the menu 1,000 times? Or
were some of the people in that bottom third actually in the top third in different circumstances?
Right. Or sometimes you put a really bad cook with a good cook. That's better than two good cooks, right? And I want to know the qualities of what made the top third great. And then of that top third, I want to know the top 1%, why they were so fucking good. And if I can have distill that into a number, that's going to make me like better decisions as to how I can, one of the things that happened when we were doing that noodle bar was, if you work the bun station, you're getting crushed. The steam bun station. This was like a revelation for me. It took me some time because everybody, regardless of who you are and your experience, you start off there.
Right.
And it's hard because every order you're getting at least one.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to be in the weeds. And you're putting your hand into a hot steamer every time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing wrong with the cook, but if you don't have the tolerance to, withstand the pain of putting your hand ever so quickly into a steamer, you're not going to be good at that station. It doesn't mean you're a bad cook. So it caused me to reevaluate the whole thing. I was like, oh, I can't put everyone here because some people just have a different pain tolerance.
I need people who feel comfortable doing that over and over and over again.
I need to know if somebody, that's really the only skill, but that is the number one skill. Besides being organized and all that stuff, the number one skill is, can they do it over and over and over again?
I'm laughing because this is like that scene in Dune when the Bene Gesserit makes Timothy Chalamet stick his hand in the box to see how long he can last.
Again, my mind can go crazy thinking about all these things. It would be amazing if this could happen. I totally understand why people would be adverse to something like this. I view this as... I could also understand how this could be just destroy cooking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, but the reason why I like this analogy and just to piggyback on what you're saying right now is I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you would put yourself as like a Hall of Fame number win above replacement cook. Like, I don't think you would say like, I'm one of the greatest win above replacement line cooks of all time.
No, I'm not.
But just like in sports, sometimes the greatest managers, coaches, whatever minds in the sport were terrible or like did not have high WAR as players.
Listen, like it's taking me some time to be able to talk about this, about me, without sounding conceited or having a bigger head than I should have. I've always tried to find a comp and not trying to be complimentary or anything, but this is actually sort of explains how I view a lot of things, what you were just talking about. I don't think that, I'm a LeBron James or a Michael Jordan or anything like that. You do have those people. It's pretty self-explanatory. And I think the conundrum for a lot of my peers, including myself, was why are they winning? You know what I mean? And or when I'm on the court, the plus and minus is higher. And we win games. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. It's all the intangibles. I don't know why. And that's the thing is you might be able to find somebody if you have all the data, like this person has shitty knife skills. That's verified. They're a little messy, but they're always trying to get organized. They're always trying to get better. And their palate is a little weird, right? It's just not there, whatever. And they don't have the creativity, whatever.
But we win.
Like, we always have great services with this person. You're like, what the fuck? No matter, and whenever you put this person out who you think on paper is going to suck, you have a bad service. And then you put him back in and you have a great service. You're like, huh. And then maybe you realize it's the combination of that mediocre cook with that great cook with the poor cook that makes it all work. I don't know. But that to me is what is so amazing.
But that's the argument for this system, right? Because I think some people hear it as like, oh, you're just going to quantify every worker and only like the ones who like perform best are going to be allowed to work. But it's like,
no, so we can show you how to improve.
Right.
And I, the reason why going back to this, because I did spend, I would say fucking couple years at least working on this. Exactly to that, right? You're going to distill it into something that's completely impersonal. I disagree completely with that. If I can give a score, let's just say what's the number one tool for grading a baseball player?
Wins above replacement.
Win above replacement. Or even say ERA. And there's other things you can break down, like on-base percentage, whatever. And the same things happen in football and basketball. The same kind of analytics. The difference now is if I say I was a baseball player, like Shohei Ohtani, you can now point to who you need to beat. Mm-hmm. Right? And then Shohei knows these are the records and these are the great players. And they've rated out here. And I'm only here. So this delta is something I need to work on if I want to exceed them. So all the great chefs that's ever happened in the world, I believe that there is a score that you could attribute to them, like a Madden game. So to know that, let's just say, Alain Chappelle was rated here, 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 and I just got my report card and I'm like, you know, that's the chasm between him being one of the all-time great French chefs and me being a fucking loser that's not good at it, right? So, but the thing is now with some foresight and some planning, it's like, okay, at this stage in my career and Alain Chappelle's career, his knife skills were this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need to work on my knife skills. Okay. Oh, I see that Alain Chappelle was never late once. Well, I guess I got to be on time all the time. So you start to use the comparison to elevate and to find ways to like make yourself better. And I think that data is important to being instructional rather than being like something I've done way too much is like, you suck. Why are you so bad at this?
Well, how can I get better, Chef? I don't know. Just get better. No, look at here's. Here are six things.
And a lot of this was trying to, for me to figure out how to be better at something I was so bad at, right? And I really tried to embrace the quantitative approach because like that, you can't lie. Numbers don't lie. And I don't have to be so emotional about it, right? And it can be more consistent. And then I was thinking, if you apply this, and again, you would have privacy laws and probably would never happen, but if theoretically you could, every cook had a number and their statistics. You know what I mean? Like, then it's like infinitely cooler. It's how different that is that then like looking at, oh man, they got to the Nuggets are stacked. You know, like the 49ers, man, they've been drafting so well, right? It's like, huh, they've had a team that's assembled from players they developed through the draft, the 49ers for the most part. You can have a restaurant where every cook that comes through there is people that they've hired from their first job. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and they don't really bring cooks in that are experienced. You see that kind of team all the time. I think it would be a little bit different to know, again, in theory, the win above replacement for every cook in every restaurant.
Well, restaurants as a whole are already one of the few things I can think of outside of sports teams that are already sort of quantified as a whole, right? Service, decor, food, whatever, whatever. Like this is how we look at restaurants.
Front of the house does it already.
Yeah.
Front of the house does it already. Sorry. Whoa, that server, that captain, fuck, man. they sell $100,000 of wine like every 2 days.
Right.
We can't lose that person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like intuitively it happens all the time. So that's why I'm trying to say it's not something that's new. Maybe it could be addressed in a different way and it could be more useful. I don't know. It could be a lot of fun. Definitely never going to happen. You know, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think about just how all the pieces working in harmony in a kitchen matters so much. So it almost becomes more like those basketball statistics where it's like when this lineup's on the floor, you know, they're worth like 130 points of offense per 100 possessions. When this lineup's on the floor, their defense is just like stifling and they have like, they give up 90 points per 100 possessions. So like, I think more about the lineup permutations than I do you kind of touched on that a little bit more than I do like the discrete. Baseball is a lot more discrete where you have like, hey, Mike Trout is this good. He's the best player in baseball, but his team fucking sucks. You know, so like, he's just stuck here on this island of irrelevancy because he's just fucking, he's balling out, but his team stinks. You know, so like, that's, I see the arguments for both, but it's really interesting to see like how you can kind of compare and contrast. But I think it's definitely for back of house a lot more lineup dependent. Whereas I think for front of house, it actually is a little bit more discreet because you're the person at the table. So that can be a little bit more like, you know, like baseball. But I think back of house is way more like basketball.
Man, imagine being able to sign players like professional soccer in Europe. It'd be sick. Everyone has a cap. I'd be so sick.
You're just going to splash out for jockey.
Oh, man, that'd be so sick.
Fantasy kitchen.
Can't happen. Literally, it's the one thing that you can't make fantasy. Fantasy everything but this shit. All right, let's take a break. This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs, scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing, keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture-raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
All right, what do we got, you know?
Actually, Chris, you had a question for Dave.
We can do a moif or we can do. I have a question for you.
Do the question.
I got a question. Is that okay for. Okay. Well, okay. Here's my ask, Dave. Longtime listener. I love what you do, Dave. I have a date with my wife on Friday. It's a rare occasion for me. We're going to go see Dune 2. And then we're going to go to Musso and Frank's, which I have never been to. My wife has a pretty strict no sex when we have house guest rule. So that's not a problem. We can eat whatever. But I realize I have no idea how to approach Musso and Frank's at all. Can you set me up with the game plan?
So if you don't know, Musso and Frank's is like a 100-year-old restaurant. It's an institution. If you have no idea at all and you don't want to Google it, if you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, they're one of the early scenes when they go to a restaurant. That's Musso and Frank's. Classic, classic, classic restaurant. I love it. Do they serve the best food in the world? Answer is unequivocally no. Is it good? Yeah, it's really good. Is it kind of food that I want to eat? Yes, it is. So when I say, is it like best? It's like, you're not trying to get the most transcendent meal. You just want fucking good. And they have a grill station that is clearly grandfathered in because there's no way in hell, you know, they would ever get the permitting to get that kind of grill ever. They have a massive kitchen. It's just a cool dining room. I would suggest, you know, if you have a table.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I'd love Yuna's opinion. I almost think it's cooler to eat at the bar. So I would probably go first, get to the bar in the back, right? There's two bars. Mm-hmm. I go one, the smaller one, get a martini, and maybe order a couple things. The meatball, pretty good there.
Okay.
Meatballs and polenta. So I might do something like that. And then you could wait. If you don't have a reservation, I would try to get something on the main dining room where you're facing the grill. And to me, that's just like the best.
It's like theater.
It's theater. It's so cool. But getting a booth is also awesome. And especially if you get the servers that tell you, this used to be an Alfred Hitchcock's booth or something like that. Very cool. And the servers there have been there 20, 30 years. And you can tell by the stars on their wrist.
It's like how many years of service.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But like to be a waiter, you have to almost like work there like 6-8 years before you can be a waiter. So really, someone who's been there like 20 years, they've been like 28 years.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what I would do. I would try, even if you have a table, I would try to get some kind of bar experience. But the smaller bar does not face the grill, but it's still cool in and of itself. My order there is, I don't know, do they have oysters there?
They have oysters and they've got like some like Louis and seafood salads and stuff.
They don't have oysters. I get the Crab Louis, which is not Swan Oyster Depot. Do not order the Welsh Rarebit. Do not get the consomme. Do not get the jellied consomme. I've tried all of these things. Every time I'm there, I always try to get one thing that I've never ordered.
How many orders? Okay, good question though. How many orders of jellied consomme do you think they move a night?
I don't know. But it's crazy that
Like less than two?
I don't know.
But it's on there. It's on there. So that dude's something.
No, they make it proper too. It's pretty crazy.
But not to be ordered.
No.
Got it.
I mean, unless you're, you know.
I'm not an aspic guy. No, yeah. I'm not in for that.
Crab Louie, that's what I do. What other appetizers do they have? I can't recall.
Crab cocktail, salmon tartare, and then they've got all the like marinated herring, the burrata.
Oh, I've had the marinated herring. Do not get that.
You said, oh, with excitement. And I lit up because I was like, is there a weird reason I should order marinated herring? I mean,
me and you have had great herring in Scandinavia.
It's not this one.
I'm not saying it's not. I just, there's other things to get.
Fair.
Steak tartare.
Okay.
You know what? Next time I go, I'm going to get the stuffed celery.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah. Stuffed they just celery. Have cool things. It just looks cool. I don't know why.
Wild.
But I almost always get the meatballs. And I've been there like three times last year and I got the herring. I've never got the escargot. That sounds like a Chris Yang order.
That's fair. That's fair.
Fair. It's always oysters and some guy and shrimp cocktail. Class. So again, I would go meatball at the bar. If you're going to then get a shrimp cocktail.
Meatball at the bar. That's the name of my memoir.
Shrimp cocktail and some oysters.
Okay.
Or Crab Louie.
Okay. I'm loving this so far.
And if you're feeling...
Ice cold martinis the drink.
Yes. If you're adventurous, try to get something that you might not get. I didn't even know they had imported sardines. Like, these are things that I'd want to order.
I know. I'm looking at that. I mean, I'm steering clear of the burrata. That's also a classic Christing pitfall. But that stuffed celery with Roquefort mousse, so interesting sounding.
Iceberg lettuce, the Mousse and Frank special. I can't remember. I've had that. The Caesar's good. I've had the chiffonade, I think. I can't remember. But all the salads you think are the same, but they're not. But I almost always get the Caesar or something like that. I think I've had the Mousse and Frank special too. They have the wedge salad. Delicious. Now, if there's two of you, so I might just do, since it's two of you, just shrimp cocktail.
As a cold seafood thing.
Because it's just two of you guys.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're like shrimp, like this is the kind of restaurant where like shrimp cocktail is necessary.
Yeah, you get the shrimp cocktail. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
When I ate there with Chris Bianco got the, oh no, someone got the lamb kidneys and bacon. Don't order that.
Each one of these starts with, because that is, lamb kidneys with bacon is something that Chris Yang would accidentally order.
Don't order
for
that.
Sure.
Don't order that. I've never gotten the pork chop. I've never got the hamburg steak. That might be something that's interesting. They always have the spinalis dorsi, the rib cap. So I almost always get that because it's not too much. I suggest you get that as a special. I've had the sand dabs here before. Do they have sand dabs? They had something like that.
Mm-hmm. Sand dabs.
I've had that. Never. Oh, and I always get a chicken parm.
Okay. That's the move.
That's the move. And somebody's gotten spaghetti there before. But I've never had pasta there.
Chicken parm.
Oh, we've had the Alfredo there. It's just like cream. It's good. It is what it is.
It's Alfredo. But that's like my wife's thing anyway. It's fettuccine Alfredo. So
but man, like thing. I'm looking at this menu right now. Oyster stew. Yeah. I've got the Welsh rarebit. Don't.
I mean, when you say don't though, like I know you love this restaurant. You are on the record avowed.
I know you love is that there's landmines, man.
That's what I'm saying. There are like a lot of landmines on this menu. Yeah. Like a lot.
Not, I know. I love it because it's like...
But this is the difference between you and a Yelper, where it's like you love a menu where there are crazy, just like 80-foot chasms you can fall into, but also like great heights, yeah. Whereas like a Yelper would step on one of these landmines and be like, it's horrible. The whole restaurant's horrible. I had the pickled herring.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is this. I don't know if the pickled herring is bad or it's like, I just don't like pickled herring. And I'll tell you for sure, you know what I don't like? Liver, kidneys. That ain't Mousseau and Frank's fault.
And yet you have intentionally stepped on those landmines before, which I love.
I always go with the steak cut, and the potatoes get you here.
Mm-hmm.
They have Lyonnaise potatoes, which are always good. They have the cottage fries. The only potato I can recommend getting, this is where the great, great conundrum in the Mooser and Frank's menu, right? Mm. Where they really, they get you every time, is when you get the potato section. It just fucks you. You want to get literally four or three.
There are a lot of potato options. There's mashed, baked, french fries, steak cut,
baked potatoes, julienne,
lyonnaise,
it's huge.
Cottage fries.
Like the only one I have not got is the julienne, because like those aren't french fries.
God, I love a baked potato. I really love a baked potato.
Lyonnaise potatoes, cottage fries, good. So potato au gratin, I'm telling you, it's dangerous. It's a little bit like Castle Anthrax. You're going to have a game plan, right? You're there for the grail.
And then you're going to see these potatoes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you are not coming out. You're just not coming out. An important thing to remind yourself is you have to get a poivre sauce.
Yes.
Oh, and maybe béarnaise. Also, the bread, hot. It's the kind of bread that you love because it's like a throwback from the, again, when I say this, it's not a knock. The bread before bread got good bread.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, mm-hmm. But full of nothing.
Yeah. No, I know. I love this kind of bread. Yeah. I love this kind of bread.
Yeah.
I can only eat so much, you know, tartine style.
Shout out to the shit bread that we used to go.
The very sour, very dense sourdough. Like, I mean, the
butter that comes, it's so cold that you... When you try to smash it onto your roll with the plastic fork, it always breaks the plastic fork. So you're just like, oh. And then you just, you know, eat a big chunk of butter.
Like, why even bother trying to spread it? Just like put it on like kitchen tiles and then just eat it that way. That's the way to do that butter.
And then they always have these pancakes that I've never had the pancakes. I don't think I've ever had dessert there.
See, this is so fantastic.
The pancakes are famous. You know, have you ever had the pancakes there?
I have not. They look pretty good, though.
Flannel cakes.
Yeah, flannel cakes.
All right, I'm going to fuck with that. Well, this is tremendously helpful, and I appreciate this, because we don't really get that many chances to go out. But I guess the way we should have played this, the more fun way we should have done this, is I should have just gone in blind, and then I should have gotten a score from Dave on my...
No. Inevitably it's good. It's good. We want to make sure you're not going to have sex that night. At the rate you're going, that's not been a problem.
I don't need any help in that department.
Jamie, I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm blushing. Let's get out of here. I can't do this anymore.
This is what's going to happen. Chris Ying, on his menu order, like almost halfway there, like right before he's going to order, he's going to get some signal from Jamie like, oh man, I think I might have sex tonight. Chris Ying is going to get some kind of signal that only a husband or wife will know. They're like,
We
might be on tonight. Like, I think she's like happy.
This is so accurate.
I think she's happy. That look or whatever, I think that's real. And then Chris Ying's going to say to myself, like, order light, order light, order light, order light, order light, shrimp cocktail, salad, and we're going to split a chicken bar. What's going to happen is Chris Ying's going to get shrimp cocktail, crab louie, shrimp louie,
right,
meatballs and potatoes.
And then I'm going to end the night underfed and undersexed because I misread the signals.
Yeah, well, really what's going to happen is Chris Ying is going to eat till he was unhappy.
Yeah.
And he's going to miss his window.
I do.
The plane's going to take off.
I'm now thinking about like Jamie's inner monologue. The plane's going to take off out of this room. I do think there must be moments in Jamie's inner monologue when we're having dinner together and I'm ordering where she's just going to be looking at me being like, is he trying not to have sex? What's he doing right now? Three kinds of potatoes. What the fuck, man? No woman wants to have sex with a man who orders three kinds of potatoes. That's the least attractive thing you can do.
But much like a movie where things are telegraphed, we know what's going to happen.
The planes.
The gods have laid out exactly how it's going to unfold. Chris Ying. It's like Minority Report. I'm gonna see
the future. The precog smell. Yeah, what's gonna happen here? Yeah. No sex tonight.
I could be right. I think Jamie.
Getting all the right signals and still cough up the ball.
I can't. I'm so full.
I'm so full. It's so bad. It's such a bad look. Because not only does it ruin the sex for that night, it kind of ruins it for like the next few weeks. Like,
guarantee it is going to be uttered. Oh, I'm so full. And there goes your plane.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like,
if you order, if you ordered in a controlled fashion, you are literally showing your love to your wife.
I know, but I can't do it. I can't do it. The compulsion is too strong. But you know what it's like? What I'm saying is not saying like, oh, I'm too full. It's like not only a mood killer for that night, it's like a memory from on.
Forever.
For that, just be like, oh, this is the guy who was too full to have sex before. Yeah,
not only that, a good sign of this is going to be this. Good sign that I would put money on this, you know, that this is going to happen. Ugh. I can't eat dessert. I'm so full. And before Jamie's going to like read about the history of the flannel pancakes, hey, Chris, can we order the flannel pancakes?
Yeah, you can get them if you want.
I'm so full. Wait,
this is also,
I don't need dessert. I don't need dessert. I'm so full.
This is also a fucking horrible move that I'm guilty of. I know you're guilty of this. You order like crazy from the savory menu. You overeat. And then when the server comes, like, oh, do you guys want to look at dessert? You play it off like your wife is the fat one, being like, ah, I'm too full, but she might want dessert. She might want something. She's a pig. She eats so much dessert.
Yeah. We've laid it all out. There's no way. It's like Doctor Strange in Avengers. It's one out of 14 million.
That's why I'm going into it with no expectation. That's why I'm going into it with my license to order 3 potatoes.
Dude. You think you have free agency, free will? No. You think you have agency of choice? You have no. You do not.
Just rationalizing.
Your DNA is controlling you, man.
Rationalizing my situation here.
You are fucked. You might as well not go to Musso and Frank's, order delivery.
That's true.
And eat Zanku chicken on your chest in bed. Lube yourself up with all the chicken grease. Jamie, you want some? Oh, this garlic sauce is so good.
Pass the Zatar.
Hey, babe. Oh, I'm ready to go. Hold Look, I'm glistening in chicken schmaltz.
So gross,
I'm going to read the comments right now. This podcast sucks because all they do is laugh at their own jokes.
It's so gross, man. It's so gross.
All right. Moving on. All right. You know what we got?
All right. We got a mini Moif. It's time for a mini version of My Opinion is Fact, where Dave and Chris give their hot takes on a variety of subjects chosen at random. All right. So cooking superpower. All right. So Dave, if you could effortlessly whip out a perfect version of one food item consistently without fail, what would it be?
Palm souffle.
I was going to say, you're going to reduce his ability to just doing one dish perfectly?
Well, here's what's so funny. It's like, I've made so many palm souffles in my life. And again, unlike most people, I don't know. I forget. Unless I'm doing it all the time. Like, I can't remember the, you know.
And
I try to make some. I'm like, I was making them when I wasn't trying to make them.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to make them so perfect.
Is a proper...
And I have too much pride to look the shit up.
But is a proper... When you make it, is it a single slice of potato or is there two slices that have been...
You can glue them together, if you want to. Right?
But
you
the
can
real...
You can use a starch and glue them together and it'll puff up into a variety of shapes for the most part. But it's about getting the right kind of potato and it's getting the right temperature. And it's actually not that hard to do if you have it all set up properly, which I never do because My fucking ego's too big to swallow like anything else. Like I was like, I can do it because I've done it so many fucking times.
Don't you want to guess? No, I'm gonna do it on the fly. It would be a good party trick to just pull out a palm soup.
I would also say making terrines. What was the French guy? Fuck. I can't remember the guy from France. But the real intricate pâtés en croûte, that to me as a culinary art form, just that kind of charcuterie as well, is just on a, I have so much admiration because it's real craft. I would say that if I could just do it quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's like a single dish for me. It's like, I always feel ashamed of how little I know about cooking Chinese food. Like, I would just like to be better at preparing, just like a better wok master than I am, which is not at all.
I was kind of inspired by, I remember, do you guys remember Dave wanted us to do like Culinary Avengers?
I do remember.
Yeah. You were supposed to do croissants and I was supposed to do hand pull noodles. Like, I still remember that. I was like,
do you make any hand pull noodles?
I suck. I just like, I still can't figure it out. It rips every time I like pull it apart. I'm just like, this is fucking bullshit. All right. So a little bit off topic. The TSA is testing self-screening security checkpoints in Las Vegas. According to Popular Science, the new machines are quite a bit more sensitive in detecting metals. They're currently being tested in TSA pre-check lines at Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas. Are these self-screening kiosks the future?
Like TSA screening self-service?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter. People are still going to fuck that up.
I think
I would not last 1 second as a TSA agent.
But I was going to say, is like anybody who's ever been to an airport, the last thing that I want is for the other people in the airport to have more control over the speed with which they pass through security. That's the worst thing that could happen.
Please remove your shoes. Please remove your shoes.
Please have your IDs ready.
Please have your IDs ready. Please take out all electronics. Please take out all electronics. The signs are over. Right. Please take out all electronics.
Do I need to take my electronics out? Oh my God. Do I need to take out my shoes? Does this jacket count as a jacket? No, that's the worst idea in the world. That's the worst idea in the world. I would never want to do that.
Oh, I looked it up. It's I can't pronounce the French. It's Gilles Varot.
He's the
he's the fucking, he's the goat of charcuterie. Verot. If you look at some of this stuff, GILLESVEROT, he's pretty stunning. I mean, I've seen him make stuff before, and I was just like, I'm glad someone exists that can do this.
Yeah, this would be a cool skill to be able to do this. I wouldn't have the foggiest idea where to start.
Yeah. Well, we got, you know, what's next?
All right. So, home stretch. Best bread for making French toast. Is it brioche, chocopan? What's your bread for making French toast?
I think it's brioche. It's more of a pain perdu. To me, probably brioche is the best French toast bread. It's dense. It's actually more dense than you might realize. It's light, but dense.
I mean, for me, it's whatever is available.
But if it's too dry and brittle, it's not going to work. It'll fall apart. Chocopan is too moist of a bread.
Yeah.
And it collapses. I think a thick slice of brioche is probably the best French toast bread. And I don't mean Texas toast, whatever, but it's brioche.
We just made one the other day. Our local Ralph sells like bolillo rolls, like the traditional torta roll. I just like sliced off the top and the bottom, and that made it nice. You need like for those extra soft ones.
Did you eat the top and the bottom?
I did eat them.
Of course you did. So why'd you even slice it off?
Well, so that I could penetrate with the milk and cream and eggs.
Welcome to Penthouse Letters, Culinary Edition.
I don't know. What is the correct word? Saturate.
The throbbing member of the bolito.
Okay, saturate the bolito. Okay, I was
moving on, boys.
I don't want to penetrate the bolillo.
All right, last one. Fuck, marry, kill. Gumbo, etouffee, jambalaya, Louisiana style.
I don't even know the answer.
This is easy for me.
Gumbo, jambalaya, etouffee. I don't know. What is the difference between all three?
So, yeah, that's...
Isn't it one's thicker, one's with rice, one's a soup?
Yeah, I feel like...
Soup, stew, rice.
God, people in New Orleans are going to be pissed. I feel like jambalaya is gumbo with rice already cooked into it.
Now they're going to be pissed after that.
All about jambalaya. I'm going to marry jambalaya. I'm going to fuck etouffee because it feels like a strange like thing that I'm not familiar with. It's like a cool new thing. I'm going to kill gumbo.
Holy shit. Now we're really going to die. Like,
I don't think you can be like, I don't think you can be like a gumbo stan if you're not actually from
New Orleans. Let me make it up for everybody that might be offended. I'm going to fuck all three of them. That's my answer.
None of them are marriage material. Yeah.
Oh, fuck all three of them.
That's horrible.
We're going to have a Creole orgy.
There's going to be rue everywhere.
Tasso ham flying left and right.
I don't know which end Dewey is which.
All right, folks, give us 5 stars.